Hello, everybody. My name is Atul Arya. I'm Chief Energy Strategist at IHS Market. Welcome to CERAWeek Agora Conversations brought to you by IHS Market. And joining me today is Jason Illion, who is the Managing Director of Koch Disruptive Technologies based in Wichita, Kansas. And Jason is going to be talking to us about the role of Koch Disruptive Technologies and also about the importance of innovation and how he sees innovation addressing the current health crisis, the pandemic crisis, and also what are some of the ingredients of being a successful entrepreneur. So Jason, welcome to CERAWeek Agora Conversations.
Well, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So Jason, my first question is, give us a little bit of your background. What have you done and how do you get to the Koch Disruptive Technologies?
Well, thank you for the kind introduction. So for the last 20 years, I've been operating as an entrepreneur. So I've started my own companies, sold my own companies, and learned with the bumps, the ups and downs all along the road. So before coming over to KDT, Koch Disruptive Technologies, which is about 3 years old, I was that entrepreneur. I was sitting on that other side, building teams, you know, iterating on our business plan, working with investors, learning how to grow the company. And so a lot of great learnings there. And I've had some successes and I've also had lots of failures, which is really part of being an entrepreneur. So as I came over to be an investor with Koch Disruptive, and whether we write a check at 1 million or 500 million, we're still looking for these types of entrepreneurs that are willing to iterate, willing to work with others and create mutual benefit. And so hopefully I'm well positioned to be voicing and communicating and working with great innovators so we can build tomorrow's platforms.
So, I mean, Koch, you know, a massive company based on what you've just described. Right. So how does your unit fit within such a big kind of what I would call thousand-pound gorilla, and you're probably like a little minnow trying to disrupt, right? So how does it work?
Yeah, you said it feels like a minnow, and at times you can, right? Uh-huh. Fortunately, the senior management is very close to what we do and have always provided air cover and is leaning into how we build KDT. And we believe in that for two reasons. One is they expect all of our business units to innovate, not just KDT. So all of our businesses should innovate. But how we think about this is KDT is the growth and venture arm that works across all the companies. So in addition to being where we can write $1 million check or a $500 million check, so we're stage and industry agnostic, we also work across our companies. So we've built a capability, what we call Koch Labs. And what Koch Labs is, it's the connective tissue that works across our companies to bring the best subject matter experts to the table to help us innovate. So as an example, KDT can make an investment and that can live on, you know, our KDT book. So as a venture or growth investment, or if we find something interesting, we can find it, but one of our businesses can invest in it as well, or they can experiment with it, or they can become a client with it, right? Or they can be a supplier, a capability provider. So we're not trying to box it. We're really trying to say, how do we find the best entrepreneurs, best platforms, and then on a case-by-case basis, figure out how do we plug them into the Koch ecosystem and using kind of KDT as the front door to do that.
And how do you decide which kind of technologies or companies to invest? Do you work with your kind of the entire organization, or you just go out and look for things on your own or some combination? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I would say if you look at Koch's history, a lot of the great companies that we've either acquired or work with have been through relationships and network building, right? So we start by building a great network. And I would say there's hundreds of VCs and other investment partners we work with, thousands of entrepreneurs that we know. So we start working there and just building great relationships. And we want to be in a place that we're not just looking for the good deals when they're ready to invest. We want to work with that company as early as possible, even if we're not invested. So we have a lot of VC partners that will call us and say, hey, we've got these great companies, they need Koch insights. And we're like, and we say, great, happy. We'll gladly connect you to our companies, even if we don't invest in the deal, because that's good. That's a mutually beneficial partnership. So that's part of it. The other half, to your point, is we are out there hunting, right? We're out there looking at technologies that maybe we don't know. So, you know, human-machine interface technologies or AI and machine learning technologies or industrial manufacturing technologies. We're looking at all of it. And because we can't be experts at everything we look at, that's when we bring our subject matter experts to the table to help us explain and diligence these to say, hey, what is really meaningful and what could have a significant impact to the company and to Coke Industries.
So I want to go into two directions. But first, just on the, you know, you come up with the idea or you go and invest in a company and you come back in and talk to one of the Coke companies, say, hey, I've got this great idea. What do you think? Do you sometimes get like a pushback saying, not invented here, you know, why are you coming to us? So how does that kind of give and take work then?
Yeah, that's a great question. So people often assume that inside of large corporations, right, there's natural not invented here or corporate pushback. And that happens everywhere, right? Coke's no different. There are certainly areas that happen inside of Coke. I think we're a little bit different for a couple of reasons. One is senior management is always built into the incentive structure that you need to continuously lean forward. So when people are incentivized to do it, they typically do it relatively well because it aligns with what's best for them personally. So that's piece one. The second piece is we often say we win with the willing, meaning not everybody wants to do it. So what pockets, what champions can you find throughout the organization that do want to lean and do want to help? If you would have asked me this 3 years ago, right when we were starting KDT, how easy or hard will it be working with our companies? I would have leaned towards the hard area. I've been warmly surprised that most people, even though change can be difficult and hard at times, they want to lean forward, right? They want to be part of something new. They want to transform themselves. Like they want to push their industry along. And so if that's an ag tech and vertical farming and next generation fertilizers, people want to look at that. That talks about how the cell phone may not be your only means of communication. You know, our Molex area wants to talk about it. So I've been not only surprised, but warmly surprised that a lot of the what I would say leadership around Coke industry leans into being really innovative. And that only helps us. That only makes us more attractive to entrepreneurs because we have all these experts coming to the table. But it also makes our jobs easier because we have subject matter experts that are leaning in and helping us ask the right questions.
Before I pivot to technologies, one other question is, do you invest in companies and then you just bring them in, meaning buy the company out and bring them in, or how? Or you just let them run on their own? What kind of different approaches you have?
Right now, we're structured primarily to make minority investments, right? So we're not out there looking for large acquisitions. I mean, we can because we're not a structured fund like a typical VC. We're investing off balance sheet. We could acquire a company. Now, we're not out there specifically looking to do that. We're looking to make a minority investments and work alongside these companies over time. Now, you know, ask me this 5 years from now or 10 years from now, will we have acquired a few companies? Hopefully. I mean, hopefully we're doing a good job finding the best platforms and maybe even acquiring some. But that's also going to depend on the company. We are not telling CEOs or entrepreneurs what to do. We're asking them, what do you want to do and how do we help you do that? And so there may be some of our companies that decide to go public. And if that's what's best for the company, we're for it. There may be some of our companies that want to stay private longer. If that's what's best for them, we're going to help them do that. I think there's a lot of creative things you can do if you're not locked into one particular structure. And we try to stay very open-minded to those things.
So Jason, you were talking about, you know, your investment philosophy and strategy. Are there one or two technology investments you have made which have benefited the Coke Industries? You brought them back in-house?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So like I said, we are stage and industry agnostic, but there are two or three areas that we've already seen that have been highly beneficial to Coke. So I'll give you one example. We invest in a company called Desktop Metal, and it does 3D metal printing of parts. Well, if you think about Coke with the thousands of warehouses and industrial facilities we have, if you can start to print metal parts on the spot versus waiting weeks or months for specific unique parts to be had, not only does it speed up production, it drives down costs. Well, we started by having just a couple of these machines. Now we're ordering more of these machines, and our companies continue to innovate so that whether you're at an oil refinery or whether you're at a gas facility or whether you're at a glass place, having these parts that can be printed on demand, whether it's inside of an office or it's out there on the shop floor, can transform the way you do business. And so that's helped us, but it's also helped Desktop Metal because as part of this process, we asked them, they said, besides the capital, what would really help you? And they said, well, you know, we love help QAing the machines. We love help seeing how do we be in other countries. you know, how do we think about logistics? And we came to the table saying, okay, here's 10 experts in 3D metal printing across our firm that can help. We have a logistics company, so we're happy to talk through that. We're in 60 countries, but hopefully it's the mutual benefit as well that we've helped them accelerate their growth. And it's this ongoing conversation. I think that's the best way to do it, where, yeah, we're a capital provider, but on top of that, we're a partner. And if any of our CEOs, like Rick Fuloff, the CEO at Desktop Metal, says, we love these guys as partners, then we know we're on the right path.
And I guess they have a huge advantage because given the size of Cook, you know, they can experiment and do different things across different types of applications, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, another company we're working with right now is one called D2IQ. And what they do is more modern architecture. So Kubernetes and containerization. So if you think about being in the cloud, even what we're doing right now on a Zoom call, you need to have a big enterprise like ours. You need to have multiple clouds. You need to be able to run things on the edge. You need to have as much uptime as possible and know your data. And they've helped us think through that in ways where we can experiment with them, but they're also working with a type of client that if you can solve our problems, you can solve them for almost anybody. And so it's that mutually beneficial relationship of working together, experimenting, knowing that everything's going to work, but at the same time, trying to run forward as fast as you can, which is always a challenge to a corporation to move faster. And at the same time, it's a challenge to the startups who have never had to make something this big move that fast. And so we're all learning in it together.
Yeah. So I want to pivot now, Jason, and have you put your sort of technologist and entrepreneur hat on. So tell us about one or two technologies you feel like have a big way to go, a big fairway, and you're really excited about, make a huge difference.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good question. So I'll give you a couple examples what I think could be transformative to Coke, and then maybe one example as well that's just transformative to culture and the industry as well. So I think we often joke that, data is the new oil. Coke knows something about oil. Now our question is, can we know something about data? I think we can make a lot better decisions across our company and across our companies if we're able to aggregate data and understand it in a more meaningful way. So using AI and machine learning and really trying to pull the nuggets of wisdom, things that we can't see, those soft items to the surface, so we can make better decisions in real time. With that comes with industrial automation and robotics. So imagine having warehouses where the robots can do the majority from, parking the 18-wheelers to unloading trucks, to understanding where inventory is, to knowing in real time how you're tracking all of that. Those types of data and industrial robotics and things could be transformative to Coke Industries. That being said, I think the other piece that could be transformative is, and we're seeing some of this in the pandemic, is what about our healthcare system? How should we think about next generation health and technologies for the human body? So Coke made an early investment in a company called InsideTech, which does non-invasive focus ultrasound on essential tremors in Parkinson's, so things that are dealing with the brain. So you sit in an MRI machine with a special helmet, and if somebody has essential tremors, if you've ever seen this, and I have friends, they shake so bad they have trouble even holding their cup or a pen. Well, if somebody lays in the machine and 2-3 hours later they stand up, their shakes are gone, and it's non-invasive. It looked like magic the first time I saw it. But think of the future where if we could fight cancers, if we could fight other issues with the brain, things with the blood-brain barrier, where it was non-invasive. And you could literally come and sit in a machine for a couple hours, and that the ultrasound, ablated that part of the brain or ablated that part of it. It's transformative to healthcare. And I think we need to be thinking about more of that as well as bio-IT. How do we get in front of the next pandemic, right? How do we use machine learning or quantum learning to understand how our bodies and genetics are made? And so I think those bio-IT things in the healthcare system could really transform the way our country runs and other countries in the world as well.
Is there something you think which would be very transformative in the current crisis, contact tracking, anything related to immunization, any technologies you feel have the potential?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple things there that we need to be thinking. Just supply chain, like where do we get our pharmaceuticals? Where do we get our PPE? Where do we get the materials that we need to have a very healthy healthcare system in the U.S. We don't know. I mean, we kind of know, but we don't track it in real time. Our supply chain and the logistics and the information behind it. There are great entrepreneurs working on it. And that's what gives me hope every day is when you talk to these entrepreneurs and where they want to be and where the system is, you know, we're going to get there, right? That you get this faith and excitement that we're going to get there. And so I think those types of things, as well as, you know, during the pandemic, we found out, look, what could happen if we lock arms and we make change happen versus instead of fighting each other. I don't care whether you're red or blue or Republican or Democrat or tall or short. I don't care. If we really believe that transformative change is good for us as a society, what if we remove some of the barriers we put there and really worked on disrupting and moving together? And we're seeing some of that. And so, well, you know, people that are dying on the front lines, it's tragic. And I'm so thankful for the healthcare workers that are fighting for us. It's also giving us great hope that tomorrow can be better than today. Like, we're not going back to normal. We're going back to a new better because of how we can transform the healthcare industry and what that means to my kids and hopefully my grandkids one day.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of potential there. So a couple of questions around, you know, your background. One around, since you started companies and made them successful, what makes a startup successful?
You know, some people think there's this little magic that happens behind the scenes and some make it and some don't. But I think there are some elements that you actually look for in an early stage company. And, you know, we're looking at the earliest stages, whether that's seed or an A and somebody's just building out their team. We often look for teams that have shared vision and complementary capabilities, right? So you want the entire leadership team. Sometimes that's just two or three people at first. Do they have the same vision of where this is going? And is it a big vision? And then do they have the complementary capabilities to get there? So meaning they're not all salesmen or they're not all technical, they're not all designers. Do you have some of each, right, that can complement each other in building the foundation to build upon? So, you know, at the early stage, sometimes we look for that hacker, hustler, designer, right? That triad of saying, do we have three people that can work together in a meaningful way? And then do they have characteristics like humility? Meaning they don't have all the answers. They want to surround themselves with other great people. Are they willing to be flexible? Because in the early stages, companies change quickly. I use Slack as an example. Slack wasn't a communications tool. It was a gaming company. It was a gaming company that Stuart Butterfield realized we can't make it work in gaming. So we're going to change. And by the way, we're using this tool to communicate. I wonder if other gaming companies would use this. And that became Slack. But that's how startups work. And if enterprises and corporations will embrace the fact that they should be innovating and thinking like that, then they can make it through rough and difficult times, which you're going to see right now. And through this this kind of crisis and pandemic and how the economy's changed, you're going to see two things happen. You're going to see some companies pull back completely from innovation, and you're going to see some people lean in. The ones that pull back are going to be hurting themselves long term because they should be leaning in a time like this because there's better talent, there's more opportunities than ever. That doesn't mean you shouldn't take care of your core businesses. You should, but you can't do it at the cost of innovation and continuing to lean forward. Because if you look at 2008 and 2009, what companies were born then? Well, you get things like the Dropboxes, right? You get things like the Ubers. You get all these great companies that were born in that era because that was a good time to innovate. And I think we need to continue to think like that. And hopefully we're doing that at Coke.
Yeah, it's a great, great point. We forget, you know, how much innovation has happened just in the last 10 years. You know, we probably wouldn't have been able to do something like this if the pandemic had happened in 2008, right, in that time frame, right? So a lot of good, great innovation. So Jason, my last question to you is about being an entrepreneur. You have been one. So what makes, give us some idea of what makes somebody a successful entrepreneur?
That's a good question. You know, one of my friends who started a company often says like this, he goes, I get up every morning and I just expect to get kicked in the face. And if I don't, I'm thinking, well, that's a good day. And if I do, then I have to figure out how I adjust to it. And there's a lot of truth to that, right? Being an entrepreneur, while, you know, you often get painted in the tech crunches and other things that it's sexy, honestly, it's really hard work. And if you look at the stats, most companies just simply don't make it. Right. So first of all, I think there's this innate sense of passion for creating new platforms and new technologies. There's an occupational hazard of knowing that you're going to be wrong and you have to be okay with that. And you also have to be a continuous learner. You have to know every single day that you don't have the answers, that you're iterating you're pivoting quickly. And so I often tell people I've done it wrong way more than I've done it right. And, you know, I've been in those places where you've had to get up and say, okay, I got to cut off my arm or cut off my leg to make this work. Which is the better option? And neither one's good, right? And so the companies that learn to overcome, and this is what I look for in entrepreneurs too, is what have you overcome? What have you overcome in your life, whether that's personal or through school or professional? What mountain have you had to climb? What obstacle have you had to get around or through? And you've come out the other side. That doesn't mean you've come out the other side glowing every time, but you've come out the other side. You've made it. Because that's what a lot of this is. It's perseverance and really working with others in a meaningful way. And that's hard to do. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody wants it. Not everybody appreciates a midnight phone call or a 3 a.m. call with Asia or whatever it may be, but that's part of building really big platforms. And for the people that love it, I'm so thankful that they do it. I feel like it's been a blessing to be part of that on my own. But it's a lot of work too. And when I talk to young people in college or people just out of college saying, we're going to build a company, make sure you paint a real picture. Right? That it's not all running around and making money all the time. A lot of times it's running around, making mistakes, losing money, having issues, but learning through that in such a way that over time you will build something that has an impact for society.
So being resilient and having, you know, kind of faith in yourself and your idea are very important, isn't it?
Yeah. And faith in those around you, right? You have to have the right people around you. There's no lone rangers in this game. Nobody succeeds on their own. People always have help.
Yeah. So Jason Illion, thank you very much, Managing Director for Cook Disruptive Industries, Disrupting the World. We were not able to meet in person in Houston this year, but we hope you come back and join us for CERAWeek and for the Innovation Agora next year in 2021. And thank you, everybody, for joining us for the CERAWeek Agora Conversations.